Please be seated. Most of you already know the Easter greeting. In fact, we said it at the beginning of the service this morning. The greeting is, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen." And the response is, "The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." Can we do that? This is a greeting which comes from the very earliest church, when Eucharist was celebrated early on Sunday morning. The followers of Jesus met each other after the resurrection, and they would greet each other by saying, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen. Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." My hope is that each time we do this, and this will be an interactive sermon, that response will get stronger and stronger. So that's the charge to you as we go through this. As I said, the greeting has its roots in the very earliest church. It's always been said with joy and enthusiasm. And I suppose the modern vernacular version of this would be, "Jesus lives," and the response would be, "Yes." But the older response, a little more formal, can still show our joy, even though it's a little more traditional. "Hallelujah, Christ is risen.
The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah."
Yeah. You're getting better each time. Although the idea of resurrection has great symbolic meaning in our lives, and it does have that. When we face oppression or grave danger, disease, even death, we also mean this proclamation quite literally. It's the essence of what Thomas experienced. He experienced remonstrance, a passionate and compelling proof. Jesus' very presence remonstrated Thomas in his doubt. It swept aside all of the doubt that he had because Jesus stood in front of him. "Hallelujah, Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." It was about the same as last time, so you got to come up a little bit next time. There's a poem written by John Updike, which I have shared with some of you in the past, but I'd like to share it with everyone today. John Updike, a very famous author now, wrote this while he was a young man and not yet famous. I find it particularly moving personally, and it helps me at least find out what's really important in life and real and what is only passing. So let me share that poem. This is called Seven Stanzas at Easter, John Updike. "Make no mistake, if he rose at all, it was as his body. If the cell's dissolution did not reverse, the molecules reknit, the amino acids rekindle, the church will fall. It was not as the flowers, each soft spring recurrent. It was not as his spirit in the mouths and fuddled eyes of the 11 apostles. It was as his flesh, ours. The same hinged thumbs and toes, the same valved heart that pierced, died, withered, paused, and then regathered out of enduring might, new strength to enclose. Let us not mock God with metaphor, analogy, sidestepping, transcendence, making of the event a parable, a sign painted in the faded credulity of earlier ages. Let us walk through the door. The stone is rolled back, not papier-mâché, not a stone in a story, but the vast rock of materiality that in the slow grinding of time will eclipse for each of us the wide light of day. And if we will have an angel at the tomb, make it a real angel, weighty with Max Planck's quanta, vivid with hair, opaque in the dawn light, robed in real linen spun on a definite loom. Let us not seek to make it less monstrous for our own convenience, our own sense of beauty, lest, awakened in one unthinkable hour, we are embarrassed by the miracle and crushed by remonstrance. Thomas was embarrassed by the idea of a miracle. He couldn't accept it. He could only imagine that this was true in a story. And then he was crushed by remonstrance when he faced his real Lord standing in front of him. His words, "My Lord and my God," were probably a mix of joy and profound embarrassment at his non-belief, and then his recognition of his Lord. Perhaps we compare Thomas to the other disciples when we hear this story, thinking that Thomas was the only real doubter. Yet if you read the gospel carefully, you find that none of the disciples believed that Jesus had been risen again. They didn't believe the women when the women came back from the tomb and told them. In fact, in this same story told in Luke, when Jesus appears in the middle of a locked room with them and says, "Shalom, my peace I give to you," they think it's a ghost. He has to prove he's real by eating a piece of broiled fish. And then he shows him his wounds. So Thomas isn't the only one of the disciples who needed to be shown Jesus to know he was real. It was true for all the disciples, for all of those who were gathered in that room. So Jesus can't be referring to anyone in that room with him when he says these words, "Blessed are they who have not seen, yet come to believe." He can't have been referring to anybody in that room with him. Blessed are those who have not seen, yet come to believe. Those words apply to no one present when they were spoken. They were meant for us. They were meant for us. Those words spoken in that room with those disciples applied not to them, because every one of them doubted and every one of them came to believe by seeing Jesus among them. Those words were meant for us. Hallelujah. Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah. As Updike says so eloquently in his 7 stanzas, though this conviction that we have is inconvenient and embarrassing, it's central to a Christian's life and faith. The resurrection really took place. Jesus came back from the grave and conquered death. Resurrection is the central message of the ministry of Christians. It drives us out into the world to share the good news, and it binds us together in the midst of suffering and oppression. In the middle of divorce, or depression, or disease, or struggle with my faith, or struggle with my friends, when it seems that everything is dark and foreboding, and there is nothing we can do but worry and complain, when it seems like there is no hope for the future, a quiet voice assures us, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen," and we whisper back, "The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." And even at death, as we each face that fate to which every human must go, we see the Lord in front of us, showing us his wounds. Not even death can defeat our life in Jesus Christ. He overcame death and was resurrected, and we share in that victory. Hallelujah! Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah! In the poorest part of the inner city, where there is unemployment and hunger and crime, the churches are full. You can go down there and see it for yourself. In the most difficult part of this country, the most difficult parts of the world, the churches are full. And in those churches, a voice proclaims, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen," and the people cry out, "The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." In South Africa, in the darkest hour of apartheid, when there was only oppression and the people had no good reason to hope, the word was proclaimed, "Hallelujah, Christ is risen," and the people cried out, "The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." Across the centuries, that cry has always been the same, and it has always been strongest in the darkest hour under the greatest oppression. Now I'm going to tell you a true story. In the time shortly after the enslavement of Russia in 1917, Lenin sent experts out to educate the masses. In one small village, the emissary arrived, commanded the villagers to assemble together, which they did, and he harangued them for an hour on the virtues of Marxism and atheism. And when he was done, he turned to the village priest and he said contemptuously, "You have 5 minutes to reply." The priest said, "I don't need 5 minutes, only 5 seconds." And he stood and spoke the greeting from across the centuries. "Hallelujah, Christ is risen," and the town thundered back, "The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah." That's the gospel, folks. Hold it in your heart. Hallelujah.